You're listening to the Best of the Sports Company with Sean Fox, an on-demand audio presentation of RedPeachSports.com and ESPN977.com. Now, today's show.
Bud Light, Sean Fox, Kevo here in the Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty Studios in West Monroe. John Tabor holding down the fort and on the Allstate agent Paul Mims hotline. It's our buddy Adam Huntsucker from the News Star. What's up, pal? How are you?
What's going on, fellas? Happy Tuesday to you.
How are you,
likewise,
sir?
Brother. Thank you so much for coming on with us today. Hey, listen, I've really enjoyed, I know it's only been a couple days, but a series that you and some other sports writers around the state are doing with our buddy Jarrett Roser from Louisiana vs. All Y'all on Twitter. And if you are a high school football fan, it's certainly worthy of checking out. But let's start there on the high school front. What are some of your top stories from high school football in our area going into next season?
Well, the biggest one is something I did some digging on a couple weeks ago, actually. You know the last time that Northeast Louisiana hasn't had a team in the Dome?
It's been a while.
1981. So think about that for a second.
We've been pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, and I bring that up to say, you know, I'm not sure who gets there this year. You know, this is kind of one of those years you don't see too often. Where, don't get me wrong, we still have some very talented teams and some that are more than capable of getting there, but I don't see like an odds-on favorite to do it. The closest might be Oak Grove, but for them to get there, I mean, they've been in the semifinals the past 3 years. They're gonna have to find a way to beat Kentwood or West St. John, which those are probably your two best in Class 1A right now. So that'll definitely be a tall task. But, you know, other than that, West Monroe will still be very good. You know, whether they can push forward and get to the Dome will probably revolve around seeding and how they break in a new quarterback. Neville has a new quarterback. I think Andrew Brister, son of Bubby, is going to be a very productive player for them. But, you know, that we'll see how what he's going to have around him and as well. And then looking – keep going down the list. I think Sterling's is still going to be very good, but are good enough to get to the Dome remains to be seen. And you know that's kind of it at the moment. You know, OCS is still retooling some. They do have some talent, but they may be a year away from pushing back in there. So I'm kind of curious to see how this shakes out this year.
I was doing a research on the recruiting rankings and where we are in the state of Louisiana, and it seems it's cyclical, I know, and I also understand that below the Alexandria, as my grandfather used to call the Boudin line, is most of the population. But I was looking at this year in particular. I know we've got the young man over at Ruston. He's the highest prospect in this area. As far as, and look, there'll be some kids who emerge, but it looks like as far as star players in our area, this might be a down cycle.
It is, and I think that this year especially, it started a bit last year, but this year is definitely, you know, the kid you're talking about is Ray Parker over at Ruston,
right, that's
who you know will probably play tight end for them this year, but it's going to be an offensive tackle in college. So you look at it from that, you don't have a whole lot of the front end, you know, Southeastern Conference, you know, Power Five caliber player. You usually have. There are some good kids, and maybe more of that group of five speed right now. I think of C.J. Brown at Wichita at wide receiver and DB, and then Logan Newell, an offensive lineman over at Neville, who's committed to the Raging Cajuns. It really is. I mean, I think there's definitely some from my conversations with coaches, at least, there's going to be some good kids coming up that are freshmen, that sophomore through eighth grade area right now. But no, there's not a lot of frontline star talent.
And I bring that up, and Bill said the Hainesville defensive tackle. Yeah, I'm with you. My point is, I think it was Rivals or 247 that I think they ranked the top 72 players, and only six were from our area. And what stands out even more, most of the talent this year, John Curtis only had one player on that list. It seems like most of the talent this particular year are coming from University Lab, Southern Lab, and really mostly Baton Rouge heavy on that list. That seems to be where the talent is in this particular class.
Well, I mean, people have said, the college coaches have said in a long time that Baton Rouge is the new New Orleans. When you think about, you know, the caliber of talent that came out of New Orleans in the 80s and 90s. And I can certainly see it, not just with the caliber athlete, but you look at some of the high school coaches that you have in Baton Rouge area. I mean, first off, you look at Chad Mahaffey at U-High, and then David Brewerton over at Zachary. Those are two of the best in the state right now. And then you've also got a couple guys that, you know, don't really get their due. Like, of course, I say that and his name escapes me. Go figure. The guy at Catholic Baton Rouge just won another state championship. So I think kind of things have shifted a little bit this year where it's very Baton Rouge heavy, but you know, we'll see how it goes in the future.
Let's turn over to the college ranks. And of course, it'll be less than 2 weeks where you and I will descend on New Orleans for our annual trip to Sunbelt Conference Media Days. And really for the first time that I can remember, and certainly since you've been on the beat, expectations are extremely high, to the point where I think anything, and we've talked about this before, anything less than a bowl game is considered a disappointment. And I know you did an article about expectations on football and basketball this season, and you also said something else that stood out to me I want to get into with. You said, with the expectations that come with that this year, if they both fall on their face, will the diehards that are out there give up? And I guess my only counter would be, if they haven't given up yet with everything they've gone through, what's going to stop them now if they don't meet those expectations?
No, and I do think there's something to that. But, you know, it makes you wonder, because you're right, but, you know, how much is there left for a fan base to endure, quite honestly? I mean, it's been the gamut, you know, for the past 25 plus years. And, you know, I don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I want to see this happen, but in this hypothetical world where it does, I would just be curious to see what the response would be, because I just don't know how you come back from it. I mean, I guess so you can always point to next year when you're going to have, you know, Caleb Evans and those guys are going to be seniors, but it seems like there's kind of a 2-year window here to have, to get to a bowl game or maybe even get to two. I mean, that would be unprecedented. And if it doesn't, and you know, if that doesn't, you know, fall that way, it just makes you wonder. Let's just put it that way.
I guess it would help if I had your mic on.
Thanks
a
lot,
buddy.
Hey, Adam, Kevo here, man. Good to hear from you. As always, we were talking rivalries earlier, and it made me think we were going to talk to you today. Give me high school. I got a 2-part question here. High school, give me your 2 or 3 biggest rivals in this area. And then if I asked you who was ULM's biggest rival, what would you say?
That's a good one. Let's start with the high school one. And I tell you one that I always heard about but never really knew it was that intense until now they're back in the same district and I was able to see it with my own eyes. Oak Grove and OCS. There was some hitting going on in there that you hear all about it. You know, 2 championship programs traditionally in Class 1A, but you just kind of need to see that one to believe it. And that's one that surprised me. I'd never seen before. And then, you know, my favorite is not even close. Carroll Wasserman. Now it may not produce championship matchups or even the best games sometimes, but I've never gone to the Baby Body Classic and not had fun. And there's definitely something to be said for that. But as far as when ULM and a rival, it's interesting. Because I think part of, you know, we talk about, you know, ULM fans and everything they go to, they've had to have the indignation of sitting watching the 3 schools they consider rivals really lap them. I mean, Louisiana Tech's pulled away and wants nothing to do with it. Arkansas State is light years ahead of where ULM is when, you know, it wasn't that long ago that these two were basically sister programs. And then you look at the Raging Cajuns and the kind of money they're putting into athletics, the facilities they have, and the private donations they're coming in. So those are the 3 big ones for ULM folks, and I just wonder what that has to be like to look up and be like, wow, how have they done all this and we're still here?
Right.
Marcus Green is certainly coming in, and justifiably so, with a lot of hype. And I mentioned the other day, and I know it upset some people, I don't know how he can live up to the expectations off what he did last year. And I brought it up for a couple reasons. Anytime you have a guy, at least I can remember, and I'm really thinking about the college game, where you have a Devin Hester and a Brian Mitchell and guys along that that cloth who they're really stand out on special teams, whether it's punt return or kick return, and automatically you start to think, hey, I want to be able to get the ball in their hands as much as possible. And I know he's a good wide receiver. But because I think they're going to try to put the ball in his hands more on offense, and because, frankly, I don't know if teams will kick to him as much as they did last year, if Marcus Green can even come close of putting up the numbers he did last year.
Well, and this is something I've touched on. I'm working on some Sun Belt preview stuff right now. That'll be out next week. But if your expectations are for Marcus Green to lead the nation in kick returns again, you can forget it. It's not going to happen. And that's not a knock on Marcus. Teams are not going to kick to him, and rightfully so. But where I do think that Marcus can have an impact is on offense. I think his numbers will be even better next year. And I don't think it's unrealistic to think so, because you know they'll be settled in for another year. You're going to have R.J. Turner back. Hopefully Xavier Brown's healthy. That'll open some things up down the field even more, because you're going to have these three targets to defend. Plus, you know, if a guy like Zach Jackson, who was impressive in the spring, can translate to the field in an in-game scenario, then I think it's within the realm of possibility for Marcus to have better offensive numbers and maybe even make up for some of that production he may not get to have on special teams next year.
Last year, Georgia State, I remember being at Sun Belt Conference Media Days and listening to their coach, Sean Elliott, talking about the style of football that they're going to have, and they're going to be a physical football team who could run the football. And, of course, you know, the coach speak, we're going to be pretty good. We expect to compete for bowl games. And I kind of rolled my eyes and thought, yeah, right, but at least, hey, you got something cool. You're going to have Turner Field. And lo and behold, they unexpectedly went to a bowl game. Who do you think has the potential to be this year's Georgia State?
Well, I guess ULM, when you think about it. I mean, if you're talking about the because that's the thing about the Sun Belt. There's always a team that comes from, not I wouldn't say really out of nowhere, but comes from the bottom half of the conference and pushes into that top tier. And it really could be them. I think Georgia State's going to take a step back next year. This year they lost their quarterback. I mean, they're recruiting at a high level. I don't think they're going to just fall flat. But I think they're probably in for a little bit of a down year, if you could call it that. And you look at some other contenders. You look at the Raging Cajuns. You look at Georgia Southern. I think both those programs are a year away with brand new staff. So, to me, the combination of continuity, not only on the coaching staff, but also what they have coming back, I think it'll be ULM that pushes in that top four.
Georgia Southern, man, they had a good thing going. Then our buddy Willie Fritz went over to Tulane. Last year was bad. Tyson Helton out quickly. With that style of offense, and you don't see it very often, and right now I got Athlon pulled up right now. They've got the Eagles 4-8, 3-5. Do you expect them to surpass that mark?
I think they can get to five because, you know, there's talent on the roster, but the problem is last year that was the youngest roster in all FBS. So that tells you a little bit. And I think, and, you know, you bring up the offense. Part of their problem was Tyson Helton didn't know what to do with the option.
Right.
You know, his first year he hired a bunch of air raid guys to come in there and run a triple option shotgun scheme, and that went about like it sounded. Then they hired a coach that was with Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech to be the offensive coordinator last year, and really they just kind of ran out of time. But I think Chad Lunsford, the new coach, may have made the best hire, one of the best hires, if not the best hire of the offseason in the Sun Belt when he hired Bobby Best to be the offensive coordinator. Little history lesson on him. He came he's another Willie Fritz guy. He runs the same offense that Willie Fritz runs. In fact, okay, he ran it at New Mexico, where ULM fans will remember going out to New Mexico and the bludgeoning that took place there. So this is a guy that understands the option and how it behaves, and in a scheme that has already proven to be successful in Statesboro. So, again, I think they're probably a year off, but they're headed in the right direction.
ESPN did a deal on the toughest three-game stretches in the country, but I started looking at them for our local teams. Would you say the toughest three-game stretch for ULM this year, September 15th, 22nd, 29th, at A&M, Troy, at Georgia State?
Yeah, it's up there. To me, the toughest stretch isn't even a three-game deal. It's that whole month where they're going to be away from Malone Stadium. And, you know, that's kind of was a quirk in the schedule. It seems like it always comes up to get them. But no, that's a pretty daunting task right there. I mean, I know folks may want to talk themselves into, you know, saying, well, we're getting A&M in the right time with Jimbo's first year, or even getting Ole Miss, you know, where they're dealing with depth issues but for probation. And yeah, that sounds good, but I mean, these are still SEC programs that have recruited at a high level over the past few years. So I know you want to buy into the belief. I mean, that's all you got, but I don't think it would be wise to do so. But yeah, that's a pretty tough one. But I tell you what, I go a step further. I think if you want to call it the Pandora's box game, is at Southern Miss.
Okay.
How that goes could open up all kinds of possibilities either way.
I put down, and that game did not make my list, and I know you listen when you can, but I had the dubious task of trying to combine the teams that we cover, much like y'all do, Grambling, Louisiana Tech, ULM, and LSU, and take their schedule and put together what I thought were the 10 most interesting games, and that was actually the first game that missed the list. I had ULM at 6-4 as far as the sixth most interesting game. I had ULM and Arkansas State. And fourth, I had Troy at ULM on my list just because it's early, and I do think you mentioned that was kind of the Pandora box game, at least in conference play. You're taking on the defending champion. I know they're celebrating. I believe it's the L Club weekend. There's a lot of activities going on September 22nd. To me, in conference play, early, will you live up to the hype? That was the barometer game for me.
Yeah, and that's a good choice, but I will say that also comes with a warning. I know Brandon Silvers is gone, but Troy isn't – I don't think Troy is as incomplete as people think they are, because I was looking at
some
stats
the
other day.
Well, yeah.
If I was looking at stats the other day, Neil Brown did a pretty sly job about playing a bunch of dudes last year. So they lost Brandon Silvers, they lost Patrick Chung, they lost some receivers, but there is still a lot of production coming back on this team, especially on defense. And, you know, just from kind of paying attention, some of the talk out there, they think they can actually be better on defense this year. So I think look into that one at your own risk. But, you know, Troy is not, I don't think Troy is going to be, you know, what some think they are. As far as, you know, oh, how are we going to replace Brandon Silvers? It's going to take us a while.
Good stuff as always, brother. Looking forward to heading down with you to Sunbelt Conference Media Day in New Orleans. How can folks follow you online?
Follow me on Twitter at Adam_Hunsucker, HUNSUCKER, and at thenewstar.com. I'm actually heading to the beach on Saturday. I will be back in time to make the drive to New Orleans.
Nice.
But in my absence, I've still got all kinds of Sunbelt preview stuff that'll be up, so look for that, and I'll throw a link or two out there while I'm enjoying myself on the water.
You enjoy it, brother. Appreciate you. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys.
All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we'll go across the pond. Kerry Furman, the host of Talk Tennis, TalkTennisWithKerry.com. We'll talk a little Wimbledon. When we come back on the company presented by Bud Light, this hour brought to you by Dax Wings and Grill, Monroe and Bossier City. Back after this. The sports company presented by Bud Light, and it's time to go across the pond and talk Wimbledon here on the sports company. And we introduced her before the break. And Kerry, thank you for taking the time to join us. I know it's a big time difference. Thanks for joining us semi late night over in England. How are you?
I am doing great. And no problem at all. Thanks for having me on. It's still bright as day over here, so you would never know that it was as late as it is.
Well, look, so many, and it's kind of ironic that we had a question the other day talking about why don't people talk tennis that much in sports mm-hmm. talk radio, and I was like, man, you know, it's definitely not saying that it doesn't generate an interest is probably not fair, because I know certainly the popularity of tennis, particularly this one, Wimbledon, but you just don't have enough people who I think like yourself who could come on and explain it to and get the common person who might not follow it every day excited about it. So it's kind of funny that I mentioned that, and then a week later, I get in touch with you, and we're able to do this. So let's go ahead and jump into it. And
let's do it.
Yeah, well, like obviously we know there's a bunch of majors, but this one seems to stick out more than the rest. What makes Wimbledon so special, and I guess so much different than a French and I guess a U.S. Open?
Yeah, well, Wimbledon is the first major slam ever. It's the very first one. So, you know, the prestige of that obviously is a huge draw. And Wimbledon also is the only tournament that sticks to a lot of traditional values in the sense that all of the players have to still wear white on the court, you know, and just the kind of ambiance is still very traditional, whereas a lot of the other tournaments, you know, are getting more, a little bit more modernized. And so I think the appeal of those things, you know, and going back in time a little bit here at Wimbledon is a huge appeal to, you know, across the board to tennis fans and to your just, you know, general viewer.
And it seems like, unlike maybe something we'll see here with the U.S. Open, not that it's not big up there in New York, because I know it is, but it feels like Wimbledon is something that entire country tends to rally around. And not only are people inside the facility, but there's people gathered around. They just want to be around it when this event is going on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the energy around it, the town absolutely explodes. Like Wimbledon Village, which surrounds the stadium, their park is just full of energy during these times. And it's absolutely incredible the draw that this tournament has, because they don't actually even sell general admission tickets. Well, they sell them, but you can't buy them online. You have to queue early, early in the morning. So you will see people sleeping out there in front of the ticket booth at like 3-4 a.m. just lining up by the hordes, and the drones just coming in to get the average about 500 general admission tickets that they will sell from that queue. And then the rest are just those super expensive center court tickets. So it's really an unbelievable thing to see.
I know it's not tennis, but I know this year in particular has got to be extra special. It's kind of the perfect storm. What's it like over there in England with the same time Wimbledon's going on and England is in the semifinals of the World Cup? I got to imagine it's a madhouse over there.
This place is an absolute madhouse. And I'm actually staying in the city in Leicester Square. And it was also Pride weekend this last weekend.
Wow.
So take all three of those things. And there was a person per square inch, per inch. You couldn't even move. It was basically like a nightclub through the entire city.
Yeah, look, from what I understand, I've seen some pictures. It looks like Bourbon Street and Mardi Gras right now across not just in one particular part of England. That's just all of England. It looks like that right now.
Pretty much. Some major, major events happening all at the same time.
That's awesome. I know this might sound simpleton, might sound simple, but this is coming from a novice. How difficult is it from, which is always interesting about this particular event, that some players, how difficult is it to go from single competition and then turn around and play in doubles competition? How difficult is that?
It can be really strenuous. It depends, honestly, on how difficult, if they play singles first, for instance, how difficult the match is and how draining it is. If it's, you know, an easier match, then it's going to be better for them if they have two matches in one day. But, you know, no match is really that easy at this level. And so it's very tough on their bodies. And it's a good advantage to an opponent if they're coming in, you know, against somebody who's already played a match, or if they're coming against somebody the following day who played two matches the prior day. It's incredibly, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but imagine just running back and forth and up and down and for 5 hours, maybe, you know, straight. It's a lot.
No, and I can't think about it because, frankly, I won't do it unless I'm getting chased by something.
I feel exhausted thinking about just a couple, maybe an hour at most, maybe half hour.
Yeah, that's my max is 30 minutes. Serena Williams, obviously, she's been the face of I don't think it's fair to say she's been the face of women's tennis. I think she's been the face of tennis, particularly in this country, for a number of years, both her and her sister. And it was interesting to see how she would bounce back pre-having a child or post-having a child. And, man, I don't know if she's a cyborg, but she continues to pick up where she left off. I guess she had an off day because she lost her first set but she still won. Is she right now the clear favorite with the top seeded player left being, I think, ranked number 11?
Yeah, so it's really the favorites, obviously, are her and then Angelique Kerber. So Kerber's going to play Ostapenko in the semis and has a great chance of then, you know, of us seeing basically a Kerber-Williams final. Both are really, really great players, but being on grass and Serena being one of the most powerful female players ever, grass is really great to speed. So she's a tough one. She's got a really solid chance here, and it's a huge opportunity, and that's where I actually think that Kerber is going to benefit, because there's a ton of pressure on her to win this Grand Slam and then get her 24th Grand Slam title and tie with Margaret Court's record, then giving her the opportunity at the U.S. Open to break the record. And that's kind of the pressure that's been sitting on her shoulders for quite some time now, and especially with her coming back to the game, that's kind of the, I think, ultimate goal that she's aiming for and that the general public is kind of wanting to see from her or expecting from her. So while she's definitely a strong favorite, I actually think that pressure might play in Kerber's favor. But if she wins it, it's going to be absolutely massive.
We talk about the American and Serena Williams, again, being the face of tennis in this country and I think internationally as well. We've been waiting for that American male. It seems like it's been forever since we've had one really at the top of the rankings in the game of tennis. And right now, John Isner at 33, having the best Wimbledon of his career, only his second career Grand Slam quarterfinal in his first appearance since 2011. What is it about this year where he's having his best run?
You know, you never know. It could be something him and his wife are preparing to have a baby. You know, he could be just very happy. He could be just getting on the court and practicing more. Maybe something has just really clicked with him. You never know exactly what it is, but obviously something has clicked because he's doing exceptionally well. But yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it. He's playing great. And, you know, up against Raonic, we've got the two, like, how tall is Raonic? Like 6'7" and John Isner 6'11", the battle of the beasts out there
right.
coming up. But it's very exciting, I think, for, you know, American men's tennis, because you are correct. It's been a while since we've had a real dominant force in that department. So to see him in the quarterfinals is huge for America. So very, very exciting. I am rooting hard for him.
Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, all healthy and still in it. Big surprise. Is the window of opportunity closed for the younger guys? Have the top guys returning from their injuries closed the door on anybody else to win this thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the only other ones that have chance at this point, you know, is Kevin Anderson, who's not. There aren't really any younger guys left. So we've got Federer against Kevin Anderson, Raonic and Isner against each other, Djokovic against Nishikori, and Delpo against Nadal. So we don't really have any of the, like, young up-and-comers necessarily in there, since this is Kevin Anderson's first Wimbledon quarterfinal, but he's not necessarily, like, a younger up-and-coming guy. He's been in the game for a minute. So they're kind of out of it for this tournament, but, you know, in the larger scheme of things, absolutely not. Djokovic, you know, he's still got his issues with injury back and forth sometimes. And, you know, Nadal as well. Both, they're all of those guys whose names we've known for so long are still playing incredibly well and breaking records and just, you know, inspiring everybody. But I don't think all of them are out of the running for the larger grand scheme of things. But for this tournament, I think it's going to be one of those guys, most likely. If it ends up being kind of a shocker, which, you know, like if Nishikori were to take it, for instance, or if Isner were to take it, that would be It would be a shock, but it would be awesome.
If anybody's going to do it, cool. We're rooting for Isner. Tell everybody in our listening audience about Talking Tennis.
Well, Talking Tennis is just kind of like what you were saying earlier, where not a lot of people talk tennis. And I want more people to talk about it because it's an absolutely incredible sport, and there are so many cool, fun, unique elements about the sport that people just don't know about. And I'm tired of hearing people say, oh, I don't know, tennis is boring. It's not. It's just because they don't know about the fun parts of it. And I want to make it more appealing to not just the avid tennis lover who love the sport because they grew up with it and they know it well. But, you know, the general sports lover who doesn't know the sport well but gets into it because it's exciting and it's fun. I want to bring them into that world and open it up more so that, you know, we are talking tennis more. It's, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the basis of it, to kind of nail exactly what you said earlier and change that.
How can folks follow you online?
What's that?
How can our listeners follow you online, Twitter, social media, find the show? How can they find all the good stuff about Carrie?
Yes, absolutely. So they can go to talktenniswithcarrie.com to follow along on my website, or you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Carrie, that's K-E-R-R-Y, Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, 3-6. And I've also got, I'm up on YouTube as well, Talk Tennis with Carrie Fearman. My last name is a little bit tricky, not Fireman. As much as it...
Unfortunately, in life, bad things happen to us. If you're struggling with some sort of trauma and wants professional help, you should consider EMDR trauma therapy from Amber White at Firm Foundations in Monroe. Amber is one of the few therapists in our area trained in EMDR trauma therapy, a type of therapy which uses eye movement and other stimulation to assist clients in processing distressing memories and beliefs. Blue Cross, Vantage, TRICARE Insurance, all accepted at Firm Foundations. If you're interested in learning more about EMDR trauma therapy, call Firm Foundations today, 654-7010, or online, myfirmfoundations.com. As you could imagine, after our last guest was on, what the most popular question was, and I'll give you the answer, yes, talktenniswithcarrie.com. You could pick up what I'm putting down.
I'm smelling what you're stepping in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. DJ Dave on the Allstate agent Paul Mims hotline. What's up?
Hey, guys. How are we doing today?
Greetings and salutations.
Good, sir. Buddy. How are you?
Kevo, got to take you to task, man. You're the only local Bengals fan that I know I could get in touch with anyway. Sean, did you see the interview that TJ Who's Your Mama had with Kylie Connor?
Oh, boy, yes.
Yeah, I did.
Are you, dude, what kind of organization are y'all running over there?
Well, it's not. Let me tell you. I mean, if we all knew back in that era that it was one of the most poorly
run organizations. You knew it was bad. You didn't know it was that bad.
Well, come on, you couldn't have known they were getting
water. No, we couldn't know it was that bad. But it's irrelevant. We knew it was the most poorly run organization in maybe all of sport. So, I mean,
we
knew it was bad.
Catch people up, kind of what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, it came out today that pre-Marvin Lewis, there was not water and or Gatorade in the locker room.
Yeah, Mike Brown, matter of fact, there were towel issues. He would not provide towels.
Use jock straps.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow, and this was not 1979. This was not 1989.
2000.
This was 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not talking 50 years ago. We're talking 18 years ago.
And yeah, I know.
When
it
I saw
horrible.
That, it blew my mind to see an NFL organization to run like that.
Somewhere Donald Sterling was laughing.
Right. Tell me about it. Yeah.
I mean, but how do you not have Gatorade and water available for your players? You know, especially back then, they didn't have the two-a-days restrictions they have now.
Right.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the movie Major League, when the owner, when she's trying to get rid of the team. And they start going through a winning streak, so she starts taking more and more things away from the team. That's kind of what it sounds like the Cincinnati Bengals locker room and organization was like pre-Marvin. So we could bang on Marvin Lewis and probably should have been fired multiple times. Hey, at least he got the guys clean jock straps and water and Gatorade.
He's made the organizational methods better, at least.
God, I don't even see that passing at a middle school to grab a bunch of old jocks and throw them in the middle of the floor and just tell the guys, hey, just pick the one that fits you. I mean, I don't understand. Hey,
I don't think those things are one size fits all either. But
yeah, I don't think so either.
No, they're not. Hey, Sean, I saw your post earlier. Was there a rumor going around that you guys might not be carrying high school football on 97 or something.
It only takes one person.
One gumball.
To misunderstand something, to turn it into a forest fire. Yes, we will be doing Union football right here on 97.7.
As well as Marion State Bank High School.
With yours truly, yes. And we will have high school football game night from 5 to 6.
Okay. I was just making sure. I didn't know that there was a rumor started, but I just wanted you to have a chance to
It just takes one person to misunderstand something, yes.
Oh, it does, especially with social media these days. I mean, I've seen it said that, you know, Twitter gives everybody a press conference. I mean, you know, lets everybody know what you feel and puts it out there. Hey, I wanted to touch before I let you go on what I still think Adam does a great job over the new star covering ULM. You know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of issues with him, some of the stuff that he writes. And I think I don't think he's pulling any punches, Sean. I've been around long enough and followed that university long enough to know that he's just reporting the facts.
Here's what happens, you know? Dave, real quick. I don't mean to cut you off, but do I agree with everything that Adam writes? Absolutely not. Just like he probably doesn't agree with everything I say on the airwaves. I think that, unfortunately, in this line of work, whether it's TV, radio, or newspaper, everybody thinks you're essentially you're supposed to be a homer for the teams and the schools that you're covering. And that's not the job. That's not Aaron's job at KNOE. That's not our job here at Sports Talk 97.7. That's not Corey and Adam's job at the News Star. Their job is to report what they see. And it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows. Now, sometimes do they tend to get – and could I be negative when maybe a little too negative? Sure. I can be guilty of that sometimes. But I also just I think we do a pretty decent job of calling it like we see it. And sometimes people, they get upset, like, why are you so negative? And why are you not doing this? And why would you report this? Well, I mean, we're not the sports information department. It's their job, the sports information departments, to get out the sunshine and rainbow story. I just try to say exactly what I see, and I think Adam does the same thing.
I do, too, and I think he does a good job. I think he gets, like you said, I think he gets crucified sometimes because he's not the homer beat writer that people are maybe accustomed to.
But that's not the job. That's not the gig. That's not what you're supposed to be.
No, that's not. No, and I like him. I think he does a great job. He covers, he gives information, he puts it out there, and, you know, he doesn't put his own spin on it negatively or positive. So I think he does a great job. But anyway, Kevo, hey, throw some money to Bengals way, man. Get them some Gatorade, some water, some jock straps.
I think they're fine. I think they're better now.
Think they're good now? Okay.
I think they're better now.
Well, they got jock straps and water.
Yeah. Yeah, they got that.
I don't know if the record's going to be better, but they do have that.
No, that's not happening.
Yeah. And Sean, and y'all have that at 97.7, correct?
Jock straps or water?
Jock straps and water, right?
Yeah, we got both.
I've
been in that Western Road studio. You got jock straps and water. You're good.
Yeah.
All right,
let's
guys,
keep this thing afloat. Yeah, appreciate you. Yeah, look, here's the thing, though. Thank you, buddy. I am a fan. Like, I want our local teams to do well. There's no doubt. But, man, I said it before. Like, I went to Tech. Sometimes people get upset when I'm not rah-rah. Drink Kool-Aid, everything sunshine and rainbows. Like, sometimes I could be more critical because I want more. I want to be better. It's not my job to be the head cheerleader.
No, it's not our job.
If I think something sucks, I'm going to say I think it sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't mean everybody's going to agree with me, but
that's okay.
It's a great gig. I get paid to give an opinion.
Isn't it a wonderful thing?
Yeah, 888-993-7762, the number to call to get in the game. We'll take a timeout. More of the company presented by Bud Light, and this hour brought to you by Dax Wings and Grill, Monroe and Bossier City. Quick timeout back after this. All right, back to the company presented by Bud Light. Before we hit you with the whip around, we had our buddy Mincy on yesterday to talk about his run through the World Series.
Which is awesome.
It was awesome.
I just don't get some of the verbiage.
No,
I
didn't understand any of it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand any of it. But we do know that he had a heck of a run Over close to 8,000 people started in this thing. He finished 327th. Now, obviously, he's not going to take all this home himself, but he won $37,000, and his producer was still around, Seth. In fact, he made it to ESPN last night, Seth Foster. His run has come to a close. He finished in the top 100. He finished 94th. So Ben finished 327. He finished 94. I got to imagine that's a pretty good
payday.
I would think so. For Seth. So kudos and a tip of the cap to Ben.
Yes,
and
awesome.
Seth representing North Louisiana in the World Series of Poker, and they put on one heck of a run over in Las Vegas.
They did. Again, you know, I see, you know, Ben's post, and I like his tweets. I want it in like layman's terms because I don't know what any of that means.
I know nothing.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
All right, let's hit you with the whip around brought to you by Tenori's, the finest selection of craft beer, premium liquor, and wine. Look no further than Tenori's, 801 Louisville Avenue in Monroe. Louisiana Tech Athletic Club and Tech Ticket Office have announced the process for Bulldog supporters to get tickets for the September 22nd football game between LSU and Louisiana Tech. Active LTAC members can begin requesting tickets to the game on July 1st by visiting latechalumni.org/LSU18. You've got till July 28th to get that done. Donors are encouraged to call the LTAC office with any questions regarding their donor level, ticket availability, and more. So, obviously, a big game on the local calendar with Louisiana Tech going down to Baton Rouge on September the 22nd to take on the Tigers. Speaking of
those
Tigers.
I got a little side bet on that game.
Do you?
Yeah, with old Quint.
Okay.
Yeah, don't know what yet. Yeah, we're going to bet dinner, but he needs points. So we got to see what the line is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm just telling that's fair.
If you're confident, go outright.
Well, I'm confident. He said, you know, hey, you know.
You're confident because you got LSU.
I'm not the way. He just said he thinks Tech's going to beat him, and I said, I'll take that bet. I mean, I don't see that happening, but, you know.
I think they're going to give him hell.
Oh, I think it's going to be a hell of a game. Think so, too. Tech's no pushover.
LSU redshirt sophomore Greedy Williams has been named NFL.com's. There was the top 10 defensive backs going into the 2018 season. Number one. Northwest Louisiana kid. North Louisiana kid, Greedy Williams. Number one defensive back in the country to watch in 2018. Draft analyst Lance Zierlein said the next big thing coming from the Tigers secondary. And here's the thing with LSU. The starting secondary is legit. It's very good, but it's also a numbers game this year. If anybody gets hurt for any extended amount of time, could get pretty bleak. But the starters, man, they've got some studs in that starting unit.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm so torn on that team. It's going to be an interesting, decisive year for LSU. There's a lot on the line there.
You could say the first week of the season could really dictate how that thing goes.
Absolutely, man.
Game with Miami's got a lot on the line.
A lot on
The Pels, like summer league's going on.
Yeah, I was watching
all three people who care. You're obviously one of them. The Pels lost to the Pistons 105-97 at the Cox Pavilion in their final game of pool play. They were really rolling. I think they were won their first two games by more than 20 points. They're now 2-1 after three games. We'll be seated along with every other team at the Summer League for a single elimination tournament that begins on Wednesday. They won't know their next opponent until the conclusion of pool play tonight. In fact, they had dominated their first two matchups, winning by a combined 39 points. I guess if you're looking for a story, a regular member of the Pel who's currently on the rotation, Cheick Diallo, had a big game. I think he had 20-something points. So if you're looking for a
there
story,
you go.
That's
yeah.
it.
There it is.
And then we mentioned that Sunbelt Conference Media Day is coming up on Monday, July the 23rd. We will be down in the Crescent City, and it was announced yesterday that representing ULM, David Griffith, linebacker to Plano, Texas, received all Sunbelt honorable mention in 2017, led ULM in tackles for losses, 9 for 24 yards, and ranked second overall in tackles. He will be there representing the defense, and really no surprise, representing the offense, Marcus Green, second-team All-American by the Sporting News, one of the best return men in the entire country, not just the Sun Belt. That will be ULM's representatives at Sun Belt Conference Media Day coming up in less than 2 weeks. There we go. That is the Whip
that
Around
is a whip.
Brought
That's
to
it.
You by Tenori's.
How about Doo-Doo Browner, man?
How about Brandon Doo-Doo Browner? He stole money from the Saints, and now he's, you know, it's fair to say, right?
I mean, it's not looking good. I mean, assault. And
I think he got a murder charge come up now.
Kidnap. Really?
Yeah. Attempted murder.
Yeah, I mean, between him and then there was some
shady,
stuff on Shady today.
Not good.
You know, and I don't understand. You have a daughter. I have a daughter. I have a granddaughter who I just absolutely is the love of my life. I can't imagine somebody ever touching Kristen or Mary Beth in a bad way. I mean, I'm telling you, I literally break out in a sweat thinking about it. I can't imagine all these, you know.
Well, here's the thing.
These brothers and fathers keeping their cool. Oh, my gosh.
Sometimes, I'm with you, but sometimes people put things in their body that make you do, and I'm not looking for excuses.
No, it rages you.
I'm totally against putting your hands on a woman.
I don't think you're saying they should be excused.
No, but I'm saying you put things in your body.
It's just a gateway to doing horrible things.
That makes you do bad things.
No, it absolutely is.
And makes you do things you would not normally do. And she also accused him of heavy drug use. So
yeah, heavy drug use and hurting, you know, pets and children. I mean, just a...
pretty much a psychopath.
Yeah, it's just...
But it will play out.
Yeah, we will see what happens, but I just can't imagine.
You will be back with me, I believe, on Thursday.
I will, brother. We're going to be Monroe, West... I mean, where are we going to be Thursday?
Too soon to tell.
It's too soon to tell. All right. I think...
I'm leaning towards the sports talk. Well, Tabor, where will you be on Thursday?
Right where I'm sitting.
Looks like me and you need to go take a trip to see Tabes.
Oh, Rustin.
We may do that at the Sports Talk 97.7 compound.
We can work that out.
What's going on with the dudes, brother?
Man, you know, not a whole lot of anything this week. We've got a lot of restaurant preparation stuff happening. Trying to get some things done with the city of Monroe. Hey, look, don't hate me for saying it, but it's like pulling teeth sometimes. It's ridiculous.
A lot of red tape.
A lot of red tape. So we're doing that and... that's been very frustrating, and I've been taking it easy since my procedure yesterday. So I'm kind of get back in the swing of things tomorrow. But we get back catering heavy and something next week. Now, but let me preface it real quick. We are fixing to put together something that we're going to get you involved, maybe Tabes involved, our Sports Talk family out and about involved. We're going to put together a community event, and just let you know a little secret. We are going to be screening a movie that I have critiqued here on this radio. We're going to get together with some of our local vendors, find a big place, and have an adult night out. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun deal. Putting that together as we speak.
There you go.
Looking so we're going to have some fun, man.
Hope to see some of our listeners out there. For Kevo, for Tabes, Sean Fox, same bad time, same bad channel tomorrow. We'll see you for another edition of The Company presented by Bud Light.
Thanks for listening to The Best of the Sports Company with Sean Fox. To listen live every weekday, tune in at ESPN977.com or subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Stitcher, or at RedPeachSports.com.